Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Need insurance more than ever. So you want to go to the experts, the ones that can go out there and make sure you're fully insured and do everything they can to save you money. Insurance and saving you money are two very important elements today. Purdy Insurance can do that. It's all at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Scott Lauber in a few moments. But first, our play-by-play call of the day, because Matt is such a big Tom Brady fan, we went with this one.
Evans wide to the left. Here's the snap. In play action fake. Pass to the right side. Caught ball. Touchdown Tampa Bay. Buccaneers take the lead with 9 seconds. Kate Otten. Fire the cannons.
It's more of a Gene Deckerhoff fan than Tom Brady, but...
Gene and I are friends, so we go back.
Exactly.
I think Gene and I want to say we go back 35 years. Something like that. And you could tell when we had him on the show, I think when, you know, Tampa Bay was going to play the Eagles, we had Gene on. He was talking about when he came here and the tour I gave him, things like that. So, great guy. Love Gene. No longer doing Florida State, just doing the Bucs. So, and Tom Brady went over, 100,000 passing yards?
Yeah. Correct.
See, he doesn't get pulled out of games like Zach Wheeler. So, you know. All right. Let's bring in Scott Lauber, who is one of the best in the business. Scott, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Doing well. What was it just like for you on a personal basis to cover a World Series and do it because you were covering the Philadelphia Phillies?
It was pretty hectic, pretty crazy. So I've been covering baseball for 17 years, and I've been fortunate enough to cover now 4 World Series involving the team that I covered, 2 with the Phillies, 3 with the Phillies, and 1 with the Red Sox. And so it's always a little bit more hectic when the team that you cover is involved in it. But, the stories are tremendous. The longer it goes, I think the more tired you get, but also the better the stories get and the more people get into it. And it was really kind of cool, I'll say this, to watch the city kind of morph back into a baseball town again for a month. It was very different, when I left in 2010 than when I came back in 2018. It had always been kind of it was an Eagles town already, but it had really sort of taken hold. And the Phillies had been bad for so long, and it was kind of right up until, when they clinched a playoff spot on October 3rd, I think a lot of people weren't sure if they'd make it or not, maybe they'll blow it, to watch the city from about October 3rd right through the end of it, so for a solid month, kind of turn back into a baseball town, that was pretty neat. That was pretty cool to see.
Except for maybe places like St. Louis and a couple of other places, isn't that really the case now in most cities across the country, where it really takes something like this to transform them back into a baseball town?
Yeah, I guess so. I think Philly is a baseball town. I just think it was a dormant one. It was a baseball town that hadn't seen the postseason in 11 years. And look, it when you see it. You travel the country and you cover baseball, and when you're in a baseball city and when you're not. And it doesn't have to be St. Louis, and it doesn't have to be New York. There are certain cities in the country that feel a little bit more passionate about baseball than others. And, I think Philly falls into the category of a really good baseball city when they have something to cheer about. And they haven't had anything to cheer about for a really long time until this year. The Phillies had, the second longest postseason drought of any active team or active postseason drought of any team. And for a few days there at the end of September, after the Mariners clinched, it was officially the long out.
Right.
And, you know, I think for it to come back the way it did, you know, it was really, like I said, it was really neat to see. And it'll be interesting to see going forward now whether the momentum for baseball and the momentum for this Phillies team kind of carries well past opening day or not. And I suspect it will. I think that the city kind of fell for this team a little bit. And, you know, I mean, not that they're not going to, you know, go crazy if the Phillies start next year 22-29 the way they started this year. But, you know, I do think that there's some affinity now for some of these for a bunch of these players. And, you know, I think there's the hope there that it's going to be more than a one-year deal.
And one of them, of course, is Bryce Harper. You've been around some great teams over the years that you have covered. How enjoyable is it when your best player plays the way he does?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it. The only thing I can compare it to on a personal basis with a team that I've covered is David Ortiz in the mid 2010s. You know, I mean, David Ortiz in 2013 hits the home run against the Tigers in the postseason that sends Torrey Hunter flipping over the right field wall at Fenway Park, and you know that home run and Max Stairs' home run. In 2008, that's really the only two that I can compare to what Harper did in Game 5 in the NLCS. Yeah. You know, hitting the home run to essentially clinch the pennant, and you know, I mean, really, it was that one and the Ortiz one for me were the two that, you know, because they were signature players in a signature moment. You know, those are legacy kind of things, and you know, I mean, he had a great month. I know he didn't have like. Didn't set the world on fire in the World Series, but I didn't think the Astros were going to give him a whole lot to hit, and they didn't. And so, yeah, I mean, it was really quite something to see. It's always quite something, I think, to see a great player rise to the occasion in a moment like that. You know, to be great at the precise time that you would expect him to. So, it was definitely something to watch for sure.
All right. I did not see Game 6 because I was on the plane coming back from Indiana. So I didn't. So what I'm doing is what I read about, didn't really watch it. But in reading about how it played out, it gave me the impression, and again, not seeing it, of Kevin Cash and Blake Snell in Game 6. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. Similar circumstances, similar situations. And I will say this, and I feel like I've been saying this a lot, writing this a lot in the last 48 hours. You know, this is something that we see a lot in baseball nowadays. It's not just Rob Thompson, and it's not just the Phillies.
Right.
A lot of teams essentially script out the game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They decide early in the day that, early in a series in this case, that Jose Alvarado is going to face Yordan Alvarez in the first high-leverage moment of a close game. And that's what they do. And, you know, we praised Rob Thompson for doing it in Game 1, in part because it worked, but also because, you know, we said, oh, look how aggressive he's being, look how bold he's being by bringing in Alvarado in the fifth inning to face Alvarez. And, you know, it was the right moment in that game. It just was. It just felt like the moment called for that kind of urgency and that kind of aggressiveness. And, you know, then they used Ranger Suarez in the seventh inning, and that worked. And, you know, we said, oh, my gosh, look at this bold bullpen managing. Well, you know, the situation was not the same in Game 6. It might have been the same inning, and it might have been the same batter, and it might have been the same reliever that he called in. But Zach Wheeler was pitching the game of his life. He'd thrown 70 pitches to that point. His last pitch was a 97-mile-an-hour sinker that Jeremy Pena rolled up the middle for a base hit. I mean, if the infield is shaded a little differently, it might be a double play. You know, there was no sign that Wheeler was losing it. There was no sign of any let-up. There was no indication whatsoever that, you know, even though there were runners on the corners in a one-run game, there was no indication, at least to me, that he had lost control of that game. And so if I'm managing, you know, and I have no way to prove this except for the guy who was sitting to my right, David Murphy, is a colleague of mine at the Inquirer, and I looked at him and I said, I don't like this move right here. Other than him, nobody else heard me say that, so you'll have to, you know. But I mean, it just didn't feel like it was the right time to take Wheeler out of that game. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, if Wheeler gives up a hit or if he gives up a home run or you lose the lead and you lose the game, well, at least you could sit there and go, you know what? We lost with our best pitcher on the mound and he was dealing. And, you know, you can kind of live with that. And they can't say that. You know, they have to say that, you know, they went to the matchups and they went to, you know, they went to, you know, what the matchups say is the safer play, is the better play. And I just, you know, to me, you know, and again, like I said, it's not just Rob Thompson and it's not just the
right.
Phillies.
Right, exactly.
To me, a lot of teams don't do that anymore. They don't go with kind of what it feels right in the moment, but rather what made sense at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when they looked over the matchups.
Okay, so in the off season, let's talk about Bryce Harper. Is he looking at any kind of surgery in the off season?
It's possible. We'll know more, I think, here in the next few days.
Okay.
But it's possible. He has this elbow thing and hasn't been able to throw, and it's just going to be a question now of whether the doctors think that 3 months or 4 months of rest will. We'll clear this up, and I have no idea medically, you know, what this thing looks like or anything like
sure.
that. But you know, it does give you pause when you see that, you know, he missed 2 months of the season with a broken thumb, and when he came back and he tried to throw, it wasn't a the elbow wasn't a whole lot better. So, you know, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but certainly if he needs any kind of procedure, they're going to want to do it here sooner than later. They've already lost, obviously, a month of their offseason because they went so deep in the playoffs. If he's going to need any kind of surgery, it's going to keep him out any length of time, they're going to want to do it as soon as they can.
All right, which now brings us to the shortstop situation. And by the way, Bryson Stott, I can't say enough good things about him, you know, in terms of a person being on the show, the whole thing. But, boy, there are some intriguing names out there like Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts, who have all decided to use their options to become free agents. Is this something the Phillies might consider?
Yeah, I think they'll explore it. And I agree with you on Stott. I'm a huge fan of his. I think he had a really, really nice rookie year that I think you had to see to appreciate. You know, I don't think it's one of those deals where you can look at the numbers and they're going to jump off the page at you and you're going to say, you know, because he didn't put up great numbers. But I mean, if you watch the at bats, you know, they were all competitive at bats. He was not a comfortable out. You know, he was not an easy out for anybody. I thought he took made even more strides after they released Didi Gregorius and made Stott the everyday shortstop. And, you know, he had a really nice year. But if you can slide him over to second base, where I thought he really played well in Gene Segura's absence earlier this year, and you can sign a Trey Turner or a Dansby Swanson or a Correa or a Bogaerts, you obviously make yourself that much better. So we'll know more, I think, again, in the next couple of days. They have a decision to make on Segura, who has an option. They probably will decline the option. And if they do that, I think that's a signal that they're going to get involved in the shortstop market, at least, you know, see what they can do and see what's out there. And it may even work for them financially. I mean, you know, the one thing that might give you some pause is that to get Turner or to get Swanson or the other guys, Correa and Bogaerts, you're going to have to go, you're going to have to give them quite a number of years on that deal. But at the same time, you know, if you take Segura's money and you take Didi Gregorius's money, which is coming off the books, and you put them together, it probably adds up to what the annual value of a shortstop deal would be for one of these guys. So financially, they might be able to make it work. It's just going to be a question of whether or not it's going to be whether they want to get involved in another long-term deal again.
It's a big question, especially when you've tasted the World Series and you're thinking, can we get back there? Interesting. You do great work. I really enjoy reading your stuff. I feel like when I'm done reading it, I've learned more about what's going on. Scott, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Scott Lauber, Philadelphia Inquirer. What a great job he does. Yeah, I mean, he makes a great point about the, you know, making the decision at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that, to me, that's just not the way you coach or manage. I'm sorry. I mean, I could, you can map out certain things. Okay, I want to have some references. But that way, when I'm in the moment, I can say, okay, what was I thinking about earlier today in the peace and quiet of my office? But to me, once you get to the, like you watch it play out, and how many positive things have I said about Rob Thompson in the past 2 months?
Not plenty.
All right? I mean, I don't even think I've ever criticized him.
No. Because it didn't warrant it until this point when he made that move to take Wheeler out when he probably should have left him in there. I'm in the same boat.
And here's my point. I gave a speech 2 weeks ago to a group about crisis management and communication during crisis management. And the first portion of the speech dealt with panic. You're in a tough spot. You're in a tough situation. It is easy to panic. You're like, oh. Yeah. And I said, you make your worst decisions in those moments. Because you're not, you know, your head's swirling a little bit. And I've kind of felt that's one of the few times where I looked at him. And again, I wasn't watching. I'm talking about reading about it. It just seemed like, based on all the circumstances, Wheeler throwing 98, Wheeler out there dealing. You know, the base hit that Pena got was like, eh. You know, then Maldonado, I guess, stuck his elbow out. I mean, or made, like, no effort to move. You know, and he's got that guard on that encapsulates, like, 4 inches. Or right? And he hit him with that. You're like, really? That's where you sit back and you say, oh, wait a minute. My eyes are telling me a story here. I don't need my card. I don't need my card. I've got eyes. Okay? I've coached and played and managed in this game my entire life. I don't need a card. I mean, it doesn't matter now. Houston's the better team. I mean, let's not dance around this. Houston's a better team. Okay? There's no getting around it. Who's the better team? The Astros are the better team. They were the best team in baseball this year. I mean, you may not like that, being a diehard Yankee fan, you think the Astros cheat.
No, but you're right.
I mean,
the better team won the series, even though, yeah, none of us like that.
But they're still a really talented team. I mean, there are not many teams that could lose Carlos Correa and replace them with Jeremy Pena. You must be one hell of an organization to do that. All right. But look, that's water under the bridge. That's more of a, to me, an analytics question, a map it out before the game question, a matchup question. There's a lot of questions that go into it, which, you know, it doesn't change the outcome at all. But, all right, we'll take a break. Come back, Nate Bauer in the final half hour. Talk Penn State football, a little Penn State basketball opening up tonight with Winthrop at the Jordan Center. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by good friends at Purdy Insurance.
The weather is getting cooler and the leaves are changing in central PA. Hi, this is Season from Purdy Insurance. If your current agent is falling short, it's time to give Purdy Insurance a call. We're a local, family-owned independent agency ready to find the right insurance to fit your needs. You can call us at 570-286-5855, stop in our office on Market Street in Sunbury, or head to our website at purdyinsurance.com to find out what we can do for you.
On a 2-1, Alvarez hits a high drive center field. Veerling's back. This game is turned upside down. A titanic drive for the ages over the batter's eye in center field. And Yordan Alvarez has given the Astros a 3-1 lead in the sixth inning.
I don't know how much more you can say about it. It's over. Hey, what the heck? The Phillies beat them twice. How many times did the Yankees beat them? I'm trying to think now. Which game was it?
Way back in July on a walk-off.
Oh. Yeah, because in June they no-hit them, too. All right, yeah.
Correct.
Wow. Hey, wow. You guys spent like $4.8 billion on personnel.
Yeah, but the Phillies aren't that far behind. Let's be real.
$4.8 billion on salaries, which is $200 million more than Walton did to buy the Broncos. All right. Just kidding.
But look at where the Broncos are right now. Incomplete punt.
Yeah, but you're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs, and everybody's going to get mad. No?
I don't see it happening as of right now, but it could. Hopefully it doesn't.
Oh, you would be a mess.
Yeah, I would be.
I mean, you're already a mess now.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Who do the Eagles have this week? Cumberland Valley?
No, home against the Washington Commanders on Monday Night Football at the Link.
Monday Night Football?
Correct.
Wow.
Was set up to be Carson Wentz's return to the Link, but of course, Carson Wentz is hurt once again, so Eagle fans get to see Taylor Heinicke again.
Who, by the way, is very good.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be the Eagles should still win this game, but it's still not – this is not a gimme game like it was in Week 3. They're a different team. But they still should win fairly comfortably. Yes, you're correct.
Well, to be honest with you, how good do you think the league is?
I would give it a C-plus at best, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Man.
There were a lot of good finishes yesterday, but it was pretty sloppy.
It's not... Oh, boy. I don't know. It's... I don't know. I'm watching Tennessee and Kansas City last night. We'll get to Nate here in a second. And yeah, you're inching your way down the field for the most part because of the way everybody's playing these days. They're trying to just take away all the deep stuff, which I understand. I mean, it's a way to play. But... Oh, boy. And then we talk about all... And they talk about all the wrong things. I mean, I'm going to go with just a field for a moment. Mahomes scores a touchdown to make it 17-50. Now, he made a legitimately outstanding run on a third and 17 or something like that. He got 21 yards. Great play. And then he scores on a touchdown run. And then he runs it in for two after a series of penalties. On the two-point conversion, McKinnon, the running back, makes a fabulous block at about the one-yard line. I mean, a great block. And Chris Collinsworth never talked about it. Oh, you guys, hey, this is special. Oh, Mahomes. Mahomes is bad. Look, Mahomes is special. I got it. But, oh, yeah. Oh, boy. President. But he doesn't get in. If McKinnon, your job as the analyst is to tell you why. And I can say that. I work with one. Okay, no offense, Chris. This is not about, oh, my goodness, it's unbelievable what he's doing. Okay, it's great. I mean, I'm great, but You don't win without teammates. And McKinnon makes a fabulous block on the two-point conversion. Like, what are we doing? I almost turned it off at that point. I said, like, you're not going to talk about the game, then I'm not going to watch the game. I mean, that's not analysis. That's just gushing because, you know, you're trying to create ratings. I mean, I got it. Mahomes is good. I got it. I mean, I've got, you know. No. I don't know. That part turned me off, to be frank with you. I was like, what the heck? This, you know, the reason, you tell people why it worked. The running back made sure that he made a block to get the two-point conversion. Then Mahomes is quick enough to make the play and the speed, you know, and the know-how to get it in. I got it. But he doesn't make the block. I can tell you right now, Mahomes would have been labeled at the two-yard line. He wasn't going to make it. I mean, he would have been labeled. I don't know. And tonight's game is what, New Orleans and who?
Baltimore. And Lamar Jackson's another one that analysts get a little too ooey and eye about, in my opinion.
He's a good player. I mean, he's fun to watch. I got it. But, like, there's more to it than just that. I mean, my goodness. There's way more to it than just that. See, Troy Aikman won't do that. Troy Aikman will just do the game. So, yeah. All right. Nate Bauer, beautiful day like this, probably out playing golf. Nate, how are you?
Sometimes.
Well, I didn't ask your family, but...
Sure, yeah. No, smart.
I'm surprised you're not out on the golf course on a day like this.
You know, if you had caught me an hour ago, the story might be a little different.
Well, and I'll be honest with you. Before I started the show today, you know what I thought? I mean, I'd love to have gone out and played some golf today, but you know what I did instead? Christmas lights. Because
yeah, I don't want to know that. That's not what I want to hear.
I know, but you know, I know why. I mean, I'll turn them off until Thanksgiving, but I don't want to be one of those guys that's out there putting it up, mm-hmm. and it's 28 mm-hmm. degrees and I'm freezing.
Yeah. Well, it's a valid point, but I committed to my happiness today, Steve.
I know.
And I shot a 78 for my effort.
Which you shot 78 the other day, too, right? That's what you told me, right?
79.
Okay.
You know, 1% better.
My best ever is 78, by the way. And I've broken 84. Okay. I've broken 84 times. 178 okay. and 379s. But, you know, but it's been a couple of years since I did that. All right.
About that.
So, hey, it's still, when you do it, you're looking around going, hey, I feel good. it was the 78 was on a blue course, and my second shot was to within 20 yards of the green. I chipped it in. That's how I got the 78. Eagle. So I have to ask you, I think you wrote a column about quarterbacks. I know it's shocking. There has been incredible consistency, mm-hmm. personal opinion. So you can if you go a different direction, whatever direction you want to go in. Yep. But he's handled this consistently the same all the way through. There's been no changes to how he's handled this.
No, it's confounding a little bit, right? Because the point of the column. Well, I wrote two columns. Well, one was, yes, that he's handled it the same way, right? It's, the guy who proved himself as the winner of the quarterback competition in the preseason, that status hasn't changed. There have been, you know, every day is tracked. Like, all of these things, people act as though it's some conspiracy, right? That players are convinced to all say the same thing, that Mike Yurcich is, right, like, toe the company line. I have news. It is not possible to get 18 to 20 year old guys to all say the same thing, and to get Mike Yurcich to say the same thing, to stay on script, which is that Sean Clifford brings all of these values that may not be tangible or may not be seen to the public at all times, but they're there. They're there. And so the players, like, forget James Franklin. Everybody wants to talk about James Franklin and his decisions and, oh, this is so obvious that Drew Aller is the guy and should be right now, is already better than Sean Clifford. I'm not debating whether or not there is merit to Drew being a fantastic quarterback. He's going to be great. That's obvious. But again, forget James Franklin. This is what the players are saying. The players are saying that, yeah, there is a benefit. Like, there are experiences that Sean Clifford has had that allow him to do things on the field in terms of checks and calls and motions and all of the stuff that football veterans are much more adept at talking about than me. He does them, and he does them extremely well. And so that's why he is the guy. That's why he will continue to be the guy through the rest of the season unless something changes.
It's not as if Sean Clifford isn't the first to tell you that Drew Aller is a great prospect, because he is a great prospect. And he got a lot of time on Saturday, and he got a lot of time against the Indiana first-team defense, and he also got a lot of time with Penn State's first-team wideouts.
All of which is great. All of which is great. But and this is the thing to me gets lost in this, is we have all collectively decided that game reps are the only thing that matters. That getting game, that first team game reps are the only thing, or are this such a paramount, overwhelming force to whether or not he can be ready next season. And it's just not true. It's just not accurate. Everything goes into this, right? Winter workouts, spring practice reps, reps on air, reps with his receivers that are going to be different next year, right? Like, all of those things accumulate. And yes, it is valuable to have these experiences. It absolutely is. But it's not so overwhelming as to put you in a position where you have to sacrifice as the coach. You have to sacrifice now for later. You're not in a position where you have to do that. And the whole thing for James Franklin and for Penn State right now is the best of both worlds is something that is attainable to you right now. Go win the game and win it by a lot so that you can plug in all those guys, not just Drew. Plug in everybody. Get as many of those guys as much opportunity as you possibly can, but do not in any way risk or ensure the outcome of the game that's at hand.
Now let's get to the rest of the group. One of the stated points for Penn State football going into this season was this recruiting class had a possibility of changing the depth on this football team. We've now seen 9 games. Is that true?
Totally. I mean, you see it. I think that there's a reality that it could have changed more, or could be changed more, if there was a need for it. Drew Shelton is the perfect example of this, right? Here's a guy who we're all talking about redshirts right now, and it's a necessary conversation because
right. You
look at Drew Shelton. Drew Shelton would not have redshirted this year had Olu Fashanu not been ahead of him.
Right.
If you have a first-round draft pick, you're not going to – whether Drew Shelton needs to be at Penn State in 4 years is beside the point at this point. It is, hey, there's no reason to spend this if you don't have to, for Drew. But Drew has been ready for a while.
Yes.
It's across the board. There are a ton of players.
Venga Ioane. All right.
Totally.
This is where you can now look at your personnel, I think, Nate, and say, okay, how many games has each played? I think Venga Ioane, for example, has played 2, I think.
Yep. Yeah.
Which means he still has 2 left. How many games have you played J.B. Nelson? How many games have you played Drew Shelton? You can start looking at this stage of the season as to how you want to mix and match people if you have to.
And they're going to have to. Right? I mean, it's clear at this point that they're going to have to figure some things out. Whether Landon Tengwall makes a miraculous comeback or not is kind of beside the point. The point is he and Olu didn't make the trip, right? So, you know, I understand that James Franklin wants injuries on the down low. I get that. But at some point, your eyes tell the story. And, the eyes right now say that two of your starters that were not physically able to come, or there was no value in them making that trip on Saturday. So, so they're going to, it's going to be a mix and match game. My assumption is that Penn State would like to preserve as many of those redshirts as they possibly can, but they're going to have to be very prudent about that process to try to figure out where those pieces fit, which games you can have matchups that are better for you that accentuates the guys that you're going to put into those positions. So we'll see.
Obviously, they completely outmanned Indiana on Saturday, but it also was one of those, you're coming off a tough emotional loss. What did you see in the resiliency of that football team Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, it still took them, a minute to get going, but yes. No, I thought that there was something to that. Mitch Tinsley talked about it after the game, how, for guys who have been around, teams have personalities, right?
Oh, I know.
Teams have personalities, and some teams, the leadership just can't let it go, and they dwell on it, and it's a problem, and it becomes something that one turns into two, and right. I mean, we've been talking about it for forever. That is something that has existed, particularly under James Franklin, but this group has not had that this year. And Mitch Tinsley talked about it on Saturday, how they have collectively been able to put disappointment away, and particularly the way that honestly either one of those losses happened this year, right, at Michigan, to be that demoralized and bounce back and have a dominating win, right, and then for Ohio State for it to be within your grasp and not be able to get it and still be able to move on. No, I think it speaks highly of what they've been able to do and what they need to do moving forward.
Every team is entitled to write their own book, their own chapter. It doesn't carry from one year to the next. I mean, I know everybody wants to think things carry over. That's not how it works. That's never how it works.
No, I'm in complete agreement. They're just especially in college sports.
Yeah,
it's so transitory. It's very much so. Every team has its own personality. It changes from year to year, and even with guys who have been around, even with the John Sutherlands and the Sean Cliffords, it still takes on a different identity when a Nick Singleton and a Catron Allen enters the picture. These personalities, they all impact each other in different ways. They're their own kind of living organisms.
Basketball opens with Winthrop tonight. You always take an interest in what's going on with the Hoops team. What's your thought on this team heading in?
I'm very anxious to see tonight. I've kind of been game theorying this of what Penn State will look like, and I don't know about you, Steve. I get into what are the analytics of this? Right, Penn State scored 64 points a game last year. We know they're going to play at a different pace this year. We know that they have more scoring options.
Right,
Andrew Funk is so fascinating to me because it's not like he's a 44% shooter from three. Right, he's 38-39% free throw or 3-point shooter.
Yep,
but his presence, by all accounts, from everything I can tell, has transformed some of what they've been able to do. Cam Winter has transformed what they've been able to do offensively. And so it comes to say, hey, okay, are they going to score 73 a game? right? Like, can they crack that? 70 is kind of an elusive number for Penn State basketball over the years, and it's a large part about skill. Having guys that can make shots. And it seems to me like this is a team that has that. And so going into this game for Winthrop, you know, Penn State should have an advantage. This is not a bad Winthrop team, though. This should be a pretty good test.
This is a team won 23 last year. Hightower's a good player. Claxton's pretty good. I mean, it's not who they were going to open up with. They were supposed to open up with somebody else, but, you know, they had to make an adjustment. But, I mean, yeah, I think you might get a pretty good read right out of the gate on certain elements right out of the gate tonight.
Yep. No, you again, are the shots going to fall? That took to 3-pointers in particular. Like that should be the black and white. This was not a 3-point shooting team last year. It should be pretty good this year.
They've got multiple options. See, the 3-point shot opens the floor up, and that changes now the spacing on the floor. If you're not a good 3-point shooting team, everybody just pack it in, and there's no space to breathe.
Which is why what Jalen Pickett did last year is all that much more impressive.
Remarkable.
Right? So if you give a guy like Jalen Pickett some shooters around him, it should change. It should fundamentally change what they look like on that end of the floor. So it's going to be super interesting to me because, you know, for as much as people look at Johnny Hara and say, oh well, you know, you're losing that rock and that foundation, and all of that is true. He was still a limited basketball player in a lot of respects, right? From a skill standpoint, you would want John on your team every year, a million out of a million. But you are adding more skill at most positions on the floor this season, which I think should create a fascinating dynamic for this team.
And this is a testimony to what I talk about in the show all the time. There are multiple ways to win. So,
totally. Micah Sousa is going to demonstrate that this year.
And that's what I say to everybody when it comes to analytics. There are multiple ways to win. Analytics happens to be one of them. Yep. Right? It's not the only one. It's one of them.
Yep. Well, Shrewsbury has said, I mean, he's been very public about it. And Zach Edey's the example that he brings up. He's like, Zach Edey's going to get his. Like, just forget about it. You're not going to be able to limit necessarily what some of the bigs in the Big Ten.
Hunter Dickinson, Trace Jackson Davis. I mean, it happens. That's, you know, there's some quality big guys.
Those guys don't have to kill you though. And three is more than two, and we can go round and round, but there are ways to compete and to have some success with the style of basketball that I think that Penn State is shaping up to have.
And that's entertaining, too. The point value of the three, really entertaining. I mean, that's, you know, that sucker flies through the air, crowd gets going. It's amazing what the 3-point shot's done.
I want to see the new seating tonight as well. I'm interested to see what that looks like.
Nah, I got the same old seat I had before, so.
Yeah, me too. But you know.
Oh, you mean others have new seats? Really?
Believe it or not, I know you wouldn't know.
Oh. Same spot, same guy. All right.
Hey, me too.
All right, brother. I'll see you up there tonight. Appreciate you.
I'm sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, Nate Bauer. We have what, Neil tomorrow?
We got Neil tomorrow. We've got Nate Davis tomorrow with Bucknell opening the season tonight as well.
When's Kazora on? Oh, Friday.
Friday.
Man, he rips you a new one every time he comes
yes,
on.
Yes, he does.
It really is so much fun. I always find it entertaining when he's on. He has stories about you. They are not good.
No, they're not, actually.
Right. And you know what should really bother you? Is that you created all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of sad, isn't it?
It's all right. Dick Girardi joins me in 90 minutes. Be great to be back with my good friend. He is awesome at what he does. How fortunate am I, the people I get to work with, including you, by the way, despite all the...
Well, thank you.
All the hilarity you give us, and it is hilarity.
This is WKOK Sunbury.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.